It's our pleasure to welcome Sean Green, who is the Associate Administrator for Investment and Special Advisor for Innovation at the Small Business Administration. One of the nice things about Sean is that he brings 20 years of experience as an entrepreneur, an investor, and business strategist. He actually is an innovator. He's familiar with innovation in a hands-on fashion, and he also has a reputation of having the work ethic of three people, or at least the accomplishments of three people and his own work ethic. But we're very pleased to have him here today, and we look forward to working with him in the future. Sean.
Thank you, Chuck. Unfortunately, those three people are Larry, Curly, and Moe, so I'm not sure that's necessarily a good thing. As Chuck said, I come into this position with experience as an entrepreneur, so first and foremost, with the SBIR program, I put myself in the shoes of the small businesses and say, what can we be doing to help with them? I do have experience as an investor as well, so thinking a lot about how we can get improve the ROI on the program. And then previously, I was also a management consultant, which means that I can do fancy PowerPoint presentations. Fortunately for all of you today, I'm the moderator, so you don't have to see my fancy PowerPoint presentations, and I'm really here to introduce a great panel of people. So we'll do that individually as they come up for their presentations. Leading off, I want to introduce John Fernandez, who is the Assistant Secretary of Commerce and the Administrator of the Economic Development Administration. He formerly the mayor of Bloomington, Indiana. And he is doing a fantastic job of bringing energy to EDA, taking not only the traditional mission, but saying, you know, how do they take it to the next level with a new set of opportunities, initiatives, very much centered around innovation and entrepreneurship. So we'll turn it over to John.
Thank you. I got a feeling that's going to cost me something later, those nice comments, Sean. So. I'm glad to be here, and it's been a whirlwind for us the last few days, so if I seem a little disjointed, that's just my normal character. I apologize in advance. But no, it is good to be a part of this panel, and I suspect in many ways it's kind of unusual for the Assistant Secretary of Commerce for EDA to be having this conversation, but I think that's represents a couple of there's a couple of reasons why it makes sense. One is that, as Sean mentioned, we're aggressively trying to elevate the agency, and it's really more of evolution than revolution. But the Economic Development Administration, we believe, has a critical role, important role to play in 21st century economic development. And clearly, today's topics are very relevant to that that thrust of the agency, and we need to modify what we do and do things in a way that are really in line with the critical infrastructure we need today, which is more than just brick and mortar. The second reason it makes sense is that Secretary Locke has really charted out it starts with the president, but the secretary has taken it to a new level within the Department of Commerce, and that's the notion of really driving our agency as a one agency. So not 14 different bureaus, but one department working in a very collaborative way on cross-cutting issues that we all need to be focused on as part of the agenda. And, you know, that's really important, particularly in the context of today's economy. I mean, everyone here knows the stats and what we've been through over the last couple of years and what we need to do to ramp things up. But one thing the president's made clear is that as we, you know, move on from rescue and recovery from the changes in our economy, when we get into this rebuilding phase, you know, we need a new framework. We need to do things in a way that are smarter, more cross-cutting across the federal government. But at the end of the day, we need a different framework for sustainable economic development. At the core of that strategy is the notion of a national innovation policy, and how are we all working collectively to drive that policy. And there's a couple of things about EDA that become relevant in that context. One is the we all know that a lot of the fast growth in new ventures, but also in job creation, is in the area of small and medium-sized businesses, new innovative companies. And where do those companies thrive? They thrive in regions. They thrive in regional innovation clusters. And so an important part of that innovation policy is the notion of building strong regional clusters to drive innovation. We've had previous discussions here at the NAS specifically to talk about the innovation clusters and the president's agenda in that regard, so we don't really need to go into a whole lot of that today, but that's certainly an important part of the ecosystem we're trying to build. We can do a lot in the area of bridging the valley of death, bringing capital to the table, but if you know, we still need to have that entire ecosystem in place with the capacity to accelerate ideas into the commercial sphere and also, most importantly, into creating the jobs. So we won't talk a whole lot about that today, but I think it is important context here. You know, Sean could talk a whole lot more than I can, particularly in broadly about the venture world, but specifically about the SBIR world. But I did want to mention that from a commerce perspective, we have a couple agencies that are focused on that with NIST and NOAA. Compared to some of our sister agencies, their budgets are relatively small, but I think they're very relevant in the work they're doing, particularly in the area of advanced biological and chemical sensing, nanofabrication, some of the radiation physics. The second element of what's happening, particularly within NIST, is around the Technology Innovation Program. That program was created in 2007, and it's facing a lot of these challenges that we all talk about fairly directly. And, you know, NIP, the TIP, you know, it's Washington, you got to talk in acronyms, the TIP's current portfolio has been able to capitalize about $230 million in investments in, you know, addressing some of these real pressing needs. And not only are these projects helping meet critical national needs, but as a source of capital for those organizations, they're really helping bridge the valley of death. But again, as we look at this new framework, we can't just keep doing what we've done in the past and expect to have a different result. So we have to fine-tune many of the existing approaches as well as look for new ones. One of the fine-tuning, if you will, that's happening within NIST around the SBIR is the SBIRTT. Again, it's Washington, so we have acronyms. But essentially, they're really focused on the technology transfer component, looking at the federal labs and other elements where we can leverage the SBIR format to even help accelerate more quickly the kinds of assets we need to support commercialization at a higher rate. So the SBIRTT model has already, I think, resulted in 27 successful tech transfer projects, a couple of commercialization licenses, 11 different research licenses, and now it's being scaled to, you know, be more successful in larger agencies. And again, this is all being leveraged from about a $4 to $5 million program. So we think we're making real progress in that regard. The other thing I wanted to talk about in the context of the Department of Commerce is the Secretary's Office of Innovation and Entrepreneurship. We see this as a agency-wide initiative to help, particularly with technology commercialization, and it's a key delivery instrument for our agency as we look to improve the broader ecosystem. So that office plays a role in coordinating activity, not just with EDA or NIST, but also with the Patent Office, with NOAA, and many of our other partners within the agency. And it also is an important part of our interagency work with SBA and Energy and others on some cross-cutting federal initiatives. I did want to just say one other thing quickly in terms of broadly what we're trying to accomplish with the agency around this issue, specifically around the issue of capital, and do something a little different. Mainly, it's more of a request to all of you rather than me to pontificate about these things, but to ask for your help, and maybe we can get into this with some of the Q&A, and you know, what are the delivery mechanisms we have that can be modified, enhanced, replaced to get at the issues in a more aggressive way. For example, we've been in the business at EDA for years of funding revolving loan funds. I think in total, there are about 580 of them around the country. Their collective portfolio is probably about $890 million. There's been proposals from our constituents and folks for us to look at, how do we deploy those resources? Are loans the only way to get this done? Are there ways that we could marry up our work with other venture groups, other seed groups to help accelerate the availability of funding? It's a very big change in some respects to how we've typically operated. It's one that hasn't been formally proposed or vetted for that matter, but it's a question that we get all the time, and I don't know if that's a relevant role that we should be pursuing or not, but I'd certainly love to hear from folks in the room today if that's something they think we ought to be pursuing to help leverage other sources of money. There's no question that the capital markets, the condition of capital markets has been a real impediment to some of that early seed money. Everywhere I go, I hear it all the time. And I remind folks that, we're one agency, but we work for the same government. So a lot of the solutions don't have to necessarily come from technically my agency. It can be, other people's agencies. But I think collectively we all know that if we're going to see the kind of accelerated innovation-led economic development I think we all know we need, we've got to get at this issue of access to capital in a very urgent way. So I would really love to hear from folks on your thoughts on a better way for us to approach this, certainly at EDA, but even more broadly at Commerce. So I'm going to end there and just wait for some Q&A. Thanks.
Thank you, John. Yes, the kind words will cost you. I'm just figuring out what exactly is the how to bill you.
I offered to cross-market your bureau. So.
Just the second point that John made about NIST, I think that's a great example of a small program that's actually doing incredible innovation in the delivery on an innovation program. So if there's a exponential or compounding effect of innovation, I think that's a perfect example. And is something that we're looking at across the program as a whole of how we can take these innovation solutions that are delivered one agency across to others. Next, I want to introduce John Sider, who is the Technology Investment Deputy Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Commerce and Economic Development. One thing, when I came in, one of the first things I did to lots of folks was to say, who should I be talking to? Where are there programs that are working and doing great things at the state and local level? And was referred to many of the people in this room, but if there's one name that I consistently heard in one program, it was Ben Franklin, and wow, that in many ways that has set the standard for technology-based economic development. That's one of the programs in his portfolio, and we'll turn to him to tell us more.
Well, I'm going to focus my remarks to Secretary Fernandez because he asked for delivery mechanisms, and this is what the Ben Franklin Technology Development Authority is for Pennsylvania. It's our bridge of the Valley of Death. So I appreciate that challenge, and that's what I'll spend a few minutes talking about. So the Ben Franklin Technology Development Authority, I'll call it the BFTDA in this presentation, is Pennsylvania's main vehicle with which to drive technology-based economic development. It was created in 2001 with the idea that if we can ensure that globally competitive technology companies are built in Pennsylvania, then we have nothing to fear from the future. We'll have a higher wage and more productive economy. It's a 21-member board of directors that manages the money that's allocated to it. These are venture capitalists, they're university deans, they are legislators, cabinet officers, folks from technology companies and industry, and it's really an excellent body. The job of the BFTDA is to ensure that the four pillars of technology-based economic development in PA are strong, and just as importantly, network together. That's really a huge amount of the work that we do in our office, is not only bolstering up these pillars, but making sure that they're all working together to drive the result that we're after. So our customers are entrepreneurs building technology companies, universities wanting to accelerate the knowledge and technologies that they've developed into commercial products and spin-outs. We work with a lot of statewide and regional nonprofit organizations that help us with technology infrastructure and skills. And we also work a lot with our investor community in Pennsylvania, both angels and venture capitalists. So this is the S-curve, as you remember from your Business 101 class. And when we think about the BFTDA, this is what we think of as kind of the road that we're all on. The continuum, what we think of the BFTDA is a continuum of capital and services available to companies at precarious points along that S-curve. In other words, the valley of death, what we've all been talking about. So you can see that most of our programs are clustered around the concept and formation stage, which is the toughest part for companies. We all know that. And of course, the SBIR and STTR programs are a big piece of that. So that's where we emphasize most of our resources. So there's five programs that deliver the money in the Ben Franklin Technology Development Authority. And I'm going to use, I'm going to give you some dollars, and I'm going to use the term in a normal year, and in a couple of slides I'll talk about why that is. But our most famous and our largest program is the Ben Franklin Technology Partners. These are four regional seed capital funds. They're essentially small venture capital funds that are the best source of seed capital in Pennsylvania. But it's not just that. They also offer very highly skilled management support through executive and residence programs. They do some commercialization activities with universities. And in a normal year, they get $28 million from the BFTDA. Each Ben Franklin, as we call them, gets $7 million. Each of them probably put $3 million of that directly into seed capital investments, anywhere from $50,000 to $500,000. So in a typical year, we have $12 million in Pennsylvania going right into companies. And the rest of the money then is used for these management support and executive and residence type programs. Then also we have our university research grant program, which that's actually a misnomer. The vast majority of what happens in that program is far beyond basic research. It's commercialization, tech transfer. These are grants that go to universities for those activities. Also, whenever there's a chance to leverage big federal dollars, we put university grant money on the table for that university because we hate to miss those opportunities. And we feel in Pennsylvania, through the advice of this 21-member board, highly capable in the sectors of nanotechnology and energy. And so everything that we're doing is in those two sectors. So all the money goes either to nanotechnology or energy. Made that decision about 5 years ago to really focus on those fields and try to make a bigger impact with the money that we have to devote, which typically is $12 to $16 million a year. Then the third program is our technology development grants. This is our most flexible money. If there is anything that is something that we're discretionary with, this is it, but we've used it most commonly to seed regional or statewide solutions to gaps that are being identified and regions are bringing to us. For instance, Pittsburgh has some really excellent robotics capabilities, and so a few years ago we were able to set up a nonprofit specifically addressing commercialization challenges in robotics products, and that's the Technology Collaborative. And we push between $4 to $6 million in these types of technology grants a year. Then the Keystone Innovation Zones is the fourth program. This was a highlight of Governor Rendell's economic stimulus package, which was passed in 2004. The whole idea was to create many innovation clusters around the geographies surrounding universities and institutions of higher education. So the point is to tie together universities, entrepreneurs, industry in these geographies and create knowledge networks that can really accelerate tech transfer and entrepreneurialism. We put some sweeteners on the table to get the institutions of higher education on board. We opened up some grant money for them to attract faculty. We also created a program called the Keystone Innovation Grant, which goes to universities to help things like tech transfer. So we put that money on the table to say, hey guys, get involved with what we're doing here, and it's had some good success in that sense. We also put in place something called the Keystone Innovation Zone Tax Credit. So in this geography, if you're an early stage company between the years of 2 years and 8 years old, you can get 100% tradable tax credit of up to $100,000 to be non-dilutive capital, much like the SBIR program. And then finally, we have the Venture Investment Program, and the purpose of that is to create real relationships, and what I mean is limited partner relationships with venture capital investors, and through that, tie them into everything that we're doing. What we've noted is when you're a limited partner, VCs return your phone calls. So we have about two dozen venture capital relationships through that program, and it's a total, our total venture universe is about $100 million fund of funds. So how does this all work? Let me give you a real-time example. Y Carbon is a company with a technology related to the manipulation of carbon atoms at the nanoscale with applications in energy and health. They had a technology that they licensed from Drexel University. So at points along their development, they accessed the BFTDA. If you think back to the S-curve and the continuum, they got $30,000 from the Ben Franklin Technology Partners. Terry Hicks is going to be one of your speakers later from that Ben Franklin Technology Partner to do a little bit of commercialization work on that. Then from the university research program, they got $250,000 to further commercialize their technology. They got $7,000 from the Innovation Partnership, which I'll talk a little bit about more, which coaches companies in how to apply for SBIR, the SBIR program, and they were able to get four SBIRs. They are now applying for their KIZ tax credit, so they're after the brokerage fees and things that they pay for the tradability. They ought to be able to get about $92,000 from that. We have them pitching to an angel fund, the Mid-Atlantic Angel Group Fund 2, which we anchored through the Ben Franklin Technology Development Authority as part of our venture program. And we now have them in our in Series A conversations with our venture capital network. They're not quite ready for the Series A yet, but they will be raising $5 million. And we fully expect that they'll be able to raise that because we're getting good feedback from the VCs. So at each point along this continuum, we're peeling away layers of risk and buying down that risk with a little bit of government money so that private investors at the Series A can really take over and take them the rest of the way that they're going. So when I said in a normal year, you can see we were bumping along there at a very nice $50 million a year for the Ben Franklin Technology Development Authority. And then the ground shook and shifted. And in last fiscal year, I don't know that we've seen other states present today. I'm sure all states are in this kind of predicament. But we had a major cut, 60%, from $50 million to $20 million. The gallows humor around around Harrisburg was that if you don't educate, medicate, or incarcerate, your budget's going to get slashed. And since we don't do any of those things, we got a really nice cut. Now, I don't think for one second that anybody, whether in the governor or the legislature or any policymaker, wants for one second that Pennsylvania ought to lose their leadership in technology-based economic development. I just think people were shocked at how revenues dropped off a cliff and had to make the cuts. It doesn't look much better for this year. And this is the effect of the recession. And while we have significant momentum and we'll get through these couple of years, my concern, and I leave at the end of this year, is that these cuts will become institutionalized, because unless we make a significant effort to make sure people understand our impact. So I have serious concerns because I really believe in these programs. Okay, Chuck wanted me to talk a little bit about how we measure the success of the BFTDA, and I came today ready to take full credit for everything that we've done here, but as luck would have it, my predecessor is in the audience, so I have to give her the credit because this was her leadership, Rebecca Bagley.
She doesn't have the mic, though.
That's true. But she did a wonderful job challenging us. I worked for her at the time to do a better job with both broadening what success means in technology-based economic development instead of a laser-like focus on jobs, because as this report, which you can download from newpa.com, will tell you, that's a trailing indicator of TBED investments, technology-based economic development investments. There are far more indicators that are in real time. The jobs come. They definitely come, as I'll show you. But they tend to come a little bit later. And she also wanted us to be much more accountable, to really be able to stand behind our numbers. So I have three observations from this process. As we have 2 years under our belt of doing this this new process, and I have three observations. The first is that this really has created a common measurement platform for our whole TBED community, which was important because we weren't all measuring our success the same way. And I think that was an important discipline to put on. Secondly, it's definitely increased our own and our partners' confidence in asserting our impact publicly. The reason is that instead of allowing program managers and folks getting the money, the intermediaries, to say what the impact was, we pushed it out to the actual customers and clients. They get surveyed twice a year, and they attribute what impact those dollars had on their success and the indicators that we give them. And so I also think that it contributed in a very concrete way to the national discussion on broadening how technology-based economic development is measured. But I would note two challenges. The first is attribution can be hard on the client. If you think back to Y Carbon, they're getting several surveys. I won't take us all the way back. They're getting several surveys, and they're having to divide up impact along that whole continuum, and that can be very challenging for them. It's not to say that it can't be done, but it's just something to note, and it's somewhat difficult. And then the second is, I would never recommend that you try to get a legislator's mind off jobs in the teeth of the worst recession in 70 years. So our timing wasn't exactly right on that, but we're making an effort. I see that my time is up, so I'll go quickly through these slides. This is what a typical year, this was last year's impact. You can see what we're measuring. This is the impact of the Rendell administration. In preparing for this speech, I found the original policy paper of the Ben Franklin Technology Development Authority in 2001. They hoped to create 10,000 jobs and get 10-to-1 leverage on their money. You can see just since 2003, not 2001, we've doubled the number of jobs and definitely got the 10-to-1 leverage at $3.73 billion. Innovation Partnership, very quickly, that's the program that we use to really give high-level technical support in helping folks write their SBIR and STTR applications. And you can see the result is a win rate about a third higher than other states. I don't think we have time to talk about the PIA. To hear the rest of this presentation, I'll sit you down in Pittsburgh. Come join us September 14th through the 16th for the State Science and Technology Institute's annual conference. Be happy to see you there. Thank you very much.
And finally, we'd like to introduce Eric Cromwell, who's the CEO of the Tennessee Technology Development Corporation. Met him yesterday for the first time, was very much impressed by his vision for what he's doing in Tennessee, a lot newer than Ben Franklin, but really exciting things he's working on, tremendous energy and discipline as well, because I could tell he really wanted to talk about SEC football, but instead he stayed focused on innovation and what they're doing. So with that, I'll turn it over to Eric.
Thanks, Sean. And for some reason, ever since I stepped off the plane, I thought my allergies were bad down in Tennessee, but something up here really has me going. So if I sound a little funny, I apologize for that. I was putting together a slide deck for this presentation, and then I remembered that I was presenting with John Sider, and we presented together before, which I think works really well, because what we have here is an example of a program that's been around longer than the one that I run, really is a leader in the field of tech-based economic development at the state level, and there's a lot of people who deserve credit for that, but certainly John as well. And so I thought I could then save all of my hoorah for what happens at the state level for TBED, although I'll pick it up in some of my kind of final conclusions. But it's just such a nice overview of what happens at the state level, how important it really is in this innovation ecosystem building. So I'll skip all that. And then I thought I could just take notes. I was here from the very first kickoff session. And so I put together some notes, and I thought I might challenge my own perspectives. And I've been really impressed today by what we learned and the level of sophistication. I think it's encouraging for a lot of people at the state level about what is happening at the federal programs today. And it's not just about one thing or more things, just the entire picture of how we can do innovation programs at the federal level and then integrate that into some of the things that are happening at the state and regional level. So I have found today very interesting. Quick update on Tennessee, because I think one reason why I get asked to do things like this is Tennessee is somewhat of a unique example. We're not off the charts on some of these innovation metrics like a California or a Massachusetts, but we're not at the very bottom either. We're a state with over 6 million people, about a $240 billion state product annually, about a $3.5 billion research base, and about a $3 billion venture community. So it's not a state without. At the same time, it is a state with extraordinary underlying potential that if targeted in the right way with strategically designed programs, we think could go into the future as a real generator of wealth and jobs in the Southeast and for the country. So that's kind of the perspective of when we look at Tennessee about how we create some of these programs, we have a lot of that infrastructure in place. And the reason why I say that is so much of what state-based TBED programs are about is building the innovation capacity. You build the research base, you then leverage the research base, you know, you look at the entrepreneurial community, the amount of venture, and we have a nice base to work from. So I think that's an important thing to put out there, where other states have to kind of move further downward on the continuum and try to build up. But given that, Tennessee is not a leader in technology-based companies. So when we look at what drives the regional economic engines of our own state, they are not technology companies in the sense that they are large organizations or growing organizations that develop technology. They are what we would describe as business model innovations. Okay, so I don't know what comes into your mind when you think about Tennessee, but there are two primary stories that kind of pop out. One is FedEx. Okay, FedEx was started in Memphis. Actually, it was pitched over in Arkansas, but Fred Smith connections to Memphis. So started in Tennessee. It's a $35 billion company. Well, it was a business model innovation. Fred figured out, had this concept. You've probably all heard the story about the paper at Yale and that sort of thing. But he changed the way the business was conducted. And now I believe they employ about 240,000 people around the world. Another one in Nashville, where I'm based, is called Hospital Corporation of America. HCA basically invented the for-profit healthcare management kind of processes and systems back in the late 60s to early 70s. And you may or may not know this, but Nashville really is the Silicon Valley of healthcare. More than 60% of the privately managed hospital beds and surgery centers in the country are managed out of Nashville, Tennessee. So it is an innovation hub, an extraordinary creator of wealth, and certainly a group that was watching the recent healthcare policy come through. But where is that technology side, right? So I mentioned we have over a $3 billion research portfolio in our state with academic and non-academic organizations. So why the disconnect? Why is there so little sponsored research happening from an industry perspective in our state? Why are there so few technology startups trying to be formed and then grow? And so there's some kind of disconnect, and I believe that can be changed with intentionally developed strategies. And so we'll see if I'm right over a period of time, because John is absolutely right that jobs are a lagging economic indicator. Many of us really struggle with this from a policy perspective at the state level, because legislators and governors and their teams are conditioned with a jobs now mentality. And everything we do in TBED is a multi-year delivery system. So it's a real struggle for us at the state. So a couple things we did. We did look specifically at SBIR. We underperform based on research capacity. Basically, our numbers in 2008, total awards amount are right at about $18 million for both Phase 1 and Phase 2 awards at SBIR. Okay, if you were to compare that with similar kind of research infrastructure with states like Colorado, Alabama, North Carolina, Oregon, and others, they would be at two or three times that amount. So what's going on? So many programs have put together what's called a Phase Zero program, which provide very small grant assistance to try to help offset some costs. Many then combine that piece with more some technical assistance too. So you don't just leave it up to them to find the technical assistance, but you might set up some kind of mentoring network, that sort of thing. So we rolled that out, and we provided up to $4,000 of grant assistance for small businesses to go ahead and make application. And what we found was, although it was valuable to some, we ended up only assisting about 17 companies through that program. The awareness still was not there around the state. So then we did a communication campaign, and we went out regionally and began to present, and we still could not generate enough interest in the program. So now we're at a phase where we're trying to go back and ask questions as to why that is and what's going on. One thing we found was, you know, I don't know who started companies in here. I have started a business before, and when you're out there, you're working very hard at a very fast pace, and typically you're aggressive and an A personality. You're going and you're going, and I can tell you there is a perception that the pain threshold to applying for a federal program like SBIR can be so overwhelming that there's a tipping point in there where many times they will look at a $100,000, $75,000 award and say it's not worth it. So we do have to overcome that, because there is such extraordinary value for SBIR and STTR. I do believe that. But I think there is a disconnect with the entrepreneurial community and who they are that prevents them from applying. And what a shame that is, because we could be transferring so much more technology out. So that's one thing we did, and we're still evaluating that. It takes time. We'll see if we actually did move the needle on any kind of awards coming back. And many times, as you know, it's not just the first year, but it's what happens the second year, because you can get some feedback. Another thing we did is through my organization, and unlike John, at the state of Pennsylvania, we're actually an independent 501c3 corporation. So when you look at different state TBED organizations, you'll get a mixed scenario. Some do it internally and source the capital out to regional partners. Some do it through an external private corp like ours. It's just all over the place. The good news is now a majority of U.S. states do have some kind of TBED mechanism. Mine happens to be very small, and we're trying to promote that to increase that. But one thing we did is a proof of concept fund, right? So we did put together a grant program through my corporation that I run, and we got all of the technology transfer directors from all the academic and actually the non-academic orgs in Tennessee too. Because not only do we have universities in Tennessee, but we have the nation's largest multi-purpose federal laboratory in the Department of Energy in Oak Ridge National Lab. And then we also have a wonderful children's research hospital called St. Jude, as many of you probably know, in Memphis. And actually the CEO of St. Jude is the chairman of my board, just a wonderful individual. But we actually got all of them together. And they began through a competitive process to put forward those early stage innovations that were that kind of one next step towards commercialization. So it's really kind of like our own mini state SBIR, if you will. And the max award was up to $100,000, and we now have picked six projects that we're trying to take it to the next step. Right? And it's not just about developing the technology, it's about building some of those relationships and trying to move it on in the continuum. The third thing, and one thing that's gotten attention recently, is Tennessee moved in for the first time into the capital formation space at the state level. Early last year, legislation was introduced in Tennessee of what's called a CAPCO fund. For those who follow the space, you're probably familiar with that. That was not going to work for the state of Tennessee, so there was a process put forward to change that bill, modify that bill. And what came out is now called in Tennessee the Teninvesco program. And bottom line, it's about $85 million in capital managed through six venture funds with a focus on early stage equity-based investments. with, as the legislation says, for transformational economic outcomes. So basically, these funds put forward strategies that would have to transform the economy, and it was up to them, which was kind of a neat way of going about it. So brand new program. I can't report out on how it's doing because it's just got it started. I think now there may have been two investments made, so we'll be tracking that. And actually, there's an expansion bill in the legislature currently this week and next. So that's kind of a three-prong approach that we have taken in this. I typed out a couple of conclusions after listening to today's speeches, so I'll wrap up with this. And I know Sean probably has questions and wants to hear from others, too. I know in a symposium like this, there's as much talent out in the audience as there is, certainly, from my perspective. So I would want to do that, too. The most important thing I was thinking about when I was listening to the presentations is the support system for this ecosystem approach has to be more than about capital. Or at least more than financial capital, right? Because it is about money, but it's not about money. You do have to have a certain amount of financial capital in a region, but that's not really the biggest thing, is it? So at TTDC, we basically put out an equation and redefine capital. And we say there are three types of capital you must have. You have to have knowledge capital, right? So that innovation base, the academic institutions, the non-academic corporations, hopefully they're doing some R&D. So you have to have knowledge capital. And then what we describe as the most important is you have to have leadership capital. Right, because without the right kind of leadership, it doesn't matter how great the technology or innovation is. They might win an SBIR award or not. But to build a scalable company, it's all about the leadership. And then the financial capital has to come too. So we kind of break it out and say without the knowledge capital, financial capital, and leadership capital, you probably cannot build an innovation-based economy. So that's that piece. The other thing that I've seen, at least in Tennessee, and I don't want to offend anyone here, but I'll go ahead and make the statement. It seems to me that, and I am a fan of SBIR, so I'll say that too before I make the statement. It seems to me that SBIR is particularly focused on technical expertise, right? I mean, it is about technology, and the review process is mostly about technology, although there is commercialization strategy built into the application and review process. It just seems overly weighted towards that technology component. And because of that, sometimes it doesn't attract the right type of enterprise-building individuals into the program or connecting into the program. And we have some examples of that, and I think that leads to things like SBIR mills that continually win maybe a majority of awards in states, and they can never break through in scale, and that's a matter of leadership. So I don't know if the audience will take issue with that comment or not, but that is something that I've seen. So I'll wrap up with kind of a question. That I keep trying to answer for myself, right? And so what I hear many times is, Eric, markets are efficient. I agree. Markets are efficient. There are examples as to when they're not. But many times people will come to me and they'll push back and they'll say, Eric, a fundable deal is a fundable deal, regardless of geography. And I'm not going to answer that from my perspective, but that is kind of the overarching feel is, you know, I'm in Tennessee, and they'll say, if that deal is fundable, it's fundable. And my typical response and kind of form of question is, I agree that might be a fundable deal, but is it fundable in Tennessee? So those are my conclusions and thoughts. Although I didn't put together a presentation, I'd be glad to send these notes out to anyone if you're interested. Thank you.
So we'd like to open it up for questions. I guess let me just kick it off with one question. So given this is an SBIR conference, with your local and regional hats on, if there were one thing that you can change about the SBIR program and not put more dollars in my locality, that's not an acceptable answer. Other than that, what would that be?
Trouble. I'm sorry. I sat with two guys at DOD at lunch, or I won't get in trouble, but I thought they made a very good point. These were two believers in the program, but thought that it could do a lot better with a little more management from the department side. A lot of the folks in the federal agencies are overwhelmed with the applications and the review process. That it takes to push these things out. And so what happens is they do get pushed out, but is there a strategy? Are there focus to what those dollars are meaning to achieve? And I wonder if that couldn't be something that folks could look at. And unfortunately, that would probably maybe take away some money from the program towards management. But I wonder if we couldn't accomplish more that way.
Two things, neither of which would cost money. One is more on the communication awareness building, how to build more quality applications in. I think Phil Singerman was right on earlier about this improved coordination with state and local TBET organizations. It amazes me somewhat that those at the state level are still kind of unknown in many circles. And the TBED leaders out of the state, local, regional level can be your greatest allies and assets as they talk about the programs and build awareness. And so it wouldn't cost any money, although I know state TBED organizations would love to have money from the federal government. So I don't want to knock that one out if it's a possibility. But just the coordination of understanding what's happening there both ways would really be impactful. The second idea is probably a dream. But with so much money, I mean, I think it was mentioned earlier, now it's approaching about $3 billion for SBIR, and this may not be possible at all, so just tell me I'm crazy. But if you did get a team together to whiteboard out some very creative ways to carve out a piece of that $3 billion and move more towards market-based principles, I must admit, I didn't even know about this Da Vinci program at the DOD, so that's probably an error on my side. I know about InQtel, but that mechanism to really use market forces to drive more of the early stage piece with federal dollars. I would love to be part of a design team that looked at something like that. It may not be feasible at all, but that could be a feeder then into the real privately managed funds, or you could manage it privately as well.
Any questions from the audience?
I have a suggestion. Follow up on Eric's point.
Sorry, only questions. Sorry.
It won't cost any money, and I think you and I chatted about this once, which is you have TBED organizations around the country. You have Pennsylvania, Tennessee. John funds many. If you were to get the information out about the award winners in a more timely fashion to these organizations, generally, and to these organizations, that would help. And secondly, if you could notify these organizations about the applicants, is that's a qualified pool, right, of people who are really interested in technology and commercialization, and you're funding one in ten. And some of the agencies do that. I'm sure SBA could figure out a way of creating a system so that there was a checkoff, so that the information could be provided, just the name of the company, the title of the technology, and this would open up avenues of support from the state agencies for commercialization activities.
I think the one thing that's come out of the conference so far is that we need to do a lot more, and Europe and other places have taken the SBIR idea and gone beyond. Question comes up as to what if we significantly increased the STTR program? You would have some fairly dramatic immediate responses to places like Tennessee, where you've got great academic universities but don't have the technology infrastructure that you had. But by increasing it, making it large enough to be really meaningful, you're going to see new clusters developing around the universities. Universities do a great job of research development, but they have lagged behind in the commercialization. But by making the STTR program, which small business never has particularly liked, big enough to really make it work, universities will sort of be required, you know, there'll be enough of money there to make it worthwhile. So the thought is to create regional clusters around the universities in states and places where they don't work well. And by increasing STTR big enough, maybe the same size as SBIR, you will create whole new clusters of businesses and university technology that don't exist now. So it's something that May's time may have come. Otherwise, the rest of the world is leapfrogging well beyond us. They spend 15% with small European Union with small business, and we're at 2.8.
So kind of a follow-up, and I also admit I have not read the report. That I did pick up a copy of the report on the program. in the national academies, but does it go through the sourcing of innovation that ends up in the program? I know some stats were used earlier. NIH specifically seemed very heavy for academic sourcing. NSF, I think, said 60%. NIH was 80%. I'm curious, beyond those two agencies, where the source of the innovation comes from. Is that highlighted in the report, or is it data that's accessible to look at? Does anyone know?
And there's no reason that you couldn't have to medicate, educate, incarcerate, innovate.
Yeah. Jim. Well, hi, I'm Dan Logue with the Capital Formation Institute. I used to be with the NASVF and a variety of folks working in the area of seed and early stage investing. Been doing this since 1996. I know a number of people in the room. This morning we spent a long time talking about how to beef up companies, technology companies. And then really quickly this afternoon we switched over to the balance sheet. So the issues just went from way over there to way over here. And then I loved your example with why carbon. It really illustrates what commercialization is. We're very glib about using commercialization as though it's a thing. But you go down that list, you got this part, this part, this part, this part, and then you've got SBIR, which is what, one of seven or eight steps? So SBIR, obviously, I don't know whether why carbon is an odd example or not, but I frankly know an awful lot about how people make investments, is that commercialization is a long process, and it requires an extremely tight focus in trying to accomplish moving technology and IP over into the balance sheet side and then launching the thing into the market. So my question is, what can we do to, number one, grab the focus, maintain the focus, and then start running ideas over into this process called commercialization as it is, not what we wish it was. We wish it was just take an idea and dump it into a big capital pool and it emerges into a huge new success. So this is a thing I've seen happen over and over and over again, and we can talk later about some of the examples. But my question is, how can we grab that focus, maintain that focus, and say this is what we're really working on? Thank you.
Well, I mean, the first thing that's going to be challenging is that every technology requires different levels of intensity related to commercialization. And, you know, Y Carbon had some assets related to their founder and their chief scientist and the CEO that, you know, I think that had they not had those, it could have taken twice as long and been three times as expensive. So I don't know if you can turn commercialization into one program that if you funded it at X level, it will start churning out companies, because there's going to always be a lot of X factors. But what I will say is right now it is a hodgepodge of beg, borrowing, and stealing your way to marketability. And as we saw in the venture capital and angel presentations, that valley of death keeps going rightward. And I'll just throw this out to complicate matters since we're in D.C. I don't have very many of our big successes as far as technology companies that we work with that haven't received a congressional earmark at one point or another. And I got to tell you, it's hard for me to argue against earmarks when they're doing the work of commercialization. And without the Congress people being the feet on the street knowing about these companies, I wonder if they would ever have a shot at a federal program. And so, you know, I'm not saying plus or minus. I'm just telling you the fact that a lot of these companies have congressional earmark and significant amount, and they use that for commercialization. I'm sure that didn't answer your question at all, but just some observations.
Could I answer my question?
Yeah. Okay. Chuck, protocol on this issue?
What I've seen since 1996 is people like Joanne Goodnight find workarounds. That's the answer. You need more people who are really smart at this whole process called commercialization. We don't need more commercialization. We need a whole army of commercializers. Thank you.
Well, thank you, everybody. I'm getting the signal from Chuck that we should end the panel, but thank you for taking the time, and thank you to our panel.